Just in time for the Christmas season, we have a special church bulletin insert for Issues Etc. and our new sacred music station, Lutheran Public Radio. Just go to the support page at issuesetc.org, download, print, and make copies of the Christmas programming bulletin insert. The bulletin insert can be used for the weekends of December 17th and 24th. Talk radio and sacred music for the Christmas season, issuesetc.org, and click support.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Joining us to analyze the new poll from Pew on declining marriage rates is St. Louis Post-Dispatch columnist Colleen Carroll Campbell. Colleen, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Hi, Todd.
Well, in 1960, a vast majority of people over 18 were already married. Now, it is, well, it's hard to believe how few are married and how late they're marrying, according to this new poll. What has changed in 50 years?
Well, there have obviously been a lot of factors. The sexual revolution played a huge role in all of this, and that is the loss of the stigma attached to both unwed childbearing, premarital sex, premarital cohabitation, all of these things that used to be frowned upon. And just the general loss of a connection in our culture and in conventional wisdom between sex, marriage, and babies. Those things kind of all split apart, and now people are sort of doing them in any order or skipping the marriage piece altogether, and that's how we wind up with these statistics, such as the one that came out from Pew, showing that barely half of all adults in the U.S., a record low, are married now, and that first-time marriage rate keeps rising and rising. Now, there are other factors, too, of course. Many people putting off marriage until they finish their educational preparation, women having more opportunities in the workplace has certainly given them more incentive sometimes to delay marriage and childbearing until they have established themselves in their careers. But I would say, by and large, most of the studies and analyses of these trends have showed that a lot of it is a change in our cultural perceptions of what's acceptable. And I think that's where we're seeing the biggest shift.
How do you think we should respond to same-sex marriage advocates who will often use statistics like those reflected in this new poll from Pew? They'll say, look, we want this, you traditional marriage advocates. We want this. And you heterosexuals don't seem to want the institution of marriage any longer. Divorce rates, waiting to get married, and fewer adults actually marrying.
Well, in many ways, it's a powerful argument that they have. Andrew Sullivan, who's a prominent gay rights activist and writer, has made this point many times in his arguments for gay marriage, saying, look, you guys already screwed this thing up. We just want to get on board the sinking ship. What do you care? So we have a lot to answer for here, I think. And I think that's true, and I think that's especially true of Christians in the United States who often are very vociferous against same-sex marriage, but don't want to talk about our skyrocketing cohabitation and divorce rates among straight couples. So in many ways, we do kind of have to get our act together in terms of strengthening heterosexual marriage if we want to also fend off same-sex marriage, but the important point to make there is that in the countries that have where same-sex marriage really has taken off, we have seen further dips in these marriage rates of straight couples, a rising cohabitation, even more out of wedlock childbearing. So, the argument in some ways, yes, it's already a mess. In other, but the response is it looks like it would become even more so. As same-sex couples, if they were allowed to redefine marriage as basically a unisex institution that has nothing to do with children, if anything, that in especially in parts of Europe where I've seen some studies done on this, if anything, that would actually continue to undermine a traditional marriage, because again, you're separating marriage from the goods of children. I mean, that's kind of the big separation that happened here that's driving this trend and the same-sex marriage push, is the idea that, marriage has nothing to do with men and women coming together to raise the children that they create together, but rather it's all about two adults of whatever gender coming together for romantic reasons for as long as it fulfills them and then breaking up when it doesn't. So, you know, there's a connection there, absolutely, and a lot of these trends are what paved the way for the same-sex marriage debate. But it's all the more reason that we need to resist the redefinition of marriage as a unisex institution, because we're only going to see these trends worsen if we do that.
Make the case for us, if you would, because I think a looming factor in all of this is cohabitation. It is now the alternate route for that would have been filled by natural and traditional marriage. So make the case that cohabitation is not legally or socially or even personally a real alternative to marriage.
Well, you know, there are reams of data on that question, and it's interesting. I mean, they've done study after study after study, and the conclusions are clear. Couples that cohabit, for one thing, they're much less likely to get married than they often think they are. And I don't have the statistics offhand, but, you know, for every union that begins in cohabitation and ends in marriage, there are quite a few that don't. So that's one thing. It's not always a track to marriage, and sometimes women think it is, and it doesn't wind up being that. But even for those couples who cohabit on their way to the altar, when you do look at studies that chart their both the longevity of their marriages, but also the satisfaction rates of their marriages, they are lower in both cases for couples who cohabit ahead of time. Now, you know, the argument is, well, why is that? Is it because more committed couples wouldn't cohabit in the first place, or they're more religiously observant and therefore, you know, they're not going to divorce anyway? You can make that argument, but a lot of researchers have made the argument that, no, there's something intrinsic to the cohabitation relationship, to starting your relationship that way, that carries over into marriage and changes the tenor and the color of your marriage. You basically are starting out with a contingent arrangement. You know, I'll stick around as long as you make me happy and meet my needs. And what they've found in studying these couples is that it's very difficult for them to make that shift to unconditional love and commitment once they slip on the wedding ring. It just, you know, we're human beings and we're not conditioned to make such a drastic shift. Obviously, again, as Christians, we see marriage as a very important commitment, something very different than just sort of sharing an apartment with someone. But when you have shared that apartment with someone for years, and then suddenly you're supposed to look at this person as one you will never leave, when the whole premise of your relationship before was there's always a way out anytime I want to walk, it just makes things very difficult. And I think that's why we see higher rates of breakups among couples who begin by cohabiting, but also lower rates of marital satisfaction in general, and just a lower sense of confidence in the marriage and in their spouses, just a sense that I don't know if this thing is going to last, and I'm not sure we do have unconditional love. So from a purely selfish perspective, not to mention, of course, just basic biblical morality about the place of sex within marriage, there are very strong reasons for young adults to take a hard look at cohabitation and realize that this is not the path to marriage that they think it is. Of course, everyone has the test drive analogy in mind, and they think, you know, you've got to live with someone first to see if you can put up with them. But one of the key pieces that stands out from a lot of these studies is that the experience you're having cohabiting is not the experience you're going to have when you're married. You're not really seeing the full picture of the person or the union, because you're living by different rules. And, you know, there is no test run for marriage. The whole idea of marriage is that it's a commitment for life, and you can't test drive that. So this is something that the research bears out, but too few young adults ever hear, and they need to hear more about it, because from a purely selfish perspective of just wanting a marriage that's going to last, regardless of the moral or religious consequences, cohabitation is a raw deal.
Have we sent young people, I don't know if it's a mixed message or an incomplete message, when we have rightly urged them to abstain until marriage, but then at the same time urge them to wait to get married and wait to get married? I'm an advocate for early marriage. I would like to have a bumper sticker that just says "Why wait?" question mark. But I think I'm whistling in the dark. Have we sent that incomplete message to young people as they're growing up and preparing to be adults?
I think we have. And in fact, there has been more research and a little more debate about this issue just in the last couple of years, which I think is a positive trend. Look, you know, I understand that it's different for every individual. I myself married in my late 20s, and I wasn't ready, nor had I met the right person in my early 20s. However, you do see a lot of these couples who have met the person they think they're going to marry, and they linger for years in these cohabiting unions or just sort of open-ended dating because it's socially unacceptable to get married in their early 20s. Now, the studies do show if you're marrying in your teens, you do have a higher chance of winding up divorced. Most young adults simply aren't that mature in their teens to make that kind of lifelong commitment. But there have also been studies that have shown just in the last couple of years that those couples who marry in their early 20s often wind up happier than those who delay and delay and delay. And part of that is because I think we see marriage as this sort of capstone to all the other adult achievements in life that you need to rack up before you get to the altar, when really marriage is about growing and changing with a partner. And it's perfectly appropriate to do that, you know, in the midst of achieving all of these goals and in the midst of kind of journeying through life to do so together. And in fact, there's a good argument to be made that you don't achieve higher marital success or happiness by waiting until all of your habits, both good and bad, are deeply ingrained and then getting married. You know, and that was one of the findings of this particular study. I believe it was University of Texas at Austin that I'm thinking of, where they actually showed, you know, that sense of being a little more flexible earlier was helpful to those marriages. And those who got married young, but not too young, often were happier because they kind of grew up together in a sense. And so I think we need to stop thinking of marriage as something that you couldn't possibly enter until you're, you know, at least 30 and you have the full graduate degree and the complete career and all of your education's out of the way and you're earning the salary you've always dreamed of and you've already bought the house and the car and you've already lived together. I mean, it makes marriage, in some ways it's idealizing it, but in other ways it's just making it an impossible dream for many people who would be happy and successful getting married earlier.
We'll wrap up our conversation with Colleen Carroll Campbell right after this, then Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week.
Unto You, a Christmas sermon preached by Pastor Todd Wilkin.
The angel can tell those shepherds and tell us, this child has been born unto you. This child has been born for you.
And we'll send you a CD of this sermon for any size gift before the end of the year. Make a secure online donation today, issuesetc.org. Thanks for thinking of us at the end of 2011.
When you need a friend, you have a friend in Jesus Christ, the Good Shepherd, and friends among His people at Good Shepherd Lutheran Church, Arnold, Missouri. At Good Shepherd Lutheran Church, we offer Christ-centered word and sacrament ministry, inspirational liturgical worship services, and faithful preaching and teaching. Sunday worship services are at 9 a.m. Sunday school and Bible class are at 10:30. We also have an excellent Christian preschool. We invite you to join us. Good Shepherd Lutheran Church, 2211 Tenbrook Road, Arnold, Missouri, 636-296-1292.
Where Christianity meets culture, you're listening to Issues Etc.
They are getting desperate.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
The pro-abortion group NARAL New York recently posted a YouTube video calling on like-minded groups to work to put crisis pregnancy centers out of business. Many have heeded the call. New York City and San Francisco have placed special regulations on crisis pregnancy centers. NARAL North Carolina recently released a study asserting that centers in the state are engaged in unethical and illegal practices. They assert many pregnancy centers portray themselves as medical clinics. Pro-life leaders in the state said the report is full of blatant falsehoods and void of substantiating evidence.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List, inviting you to join us in our battle for life. For more, go online to sba-list.org.
He promises His mercy to the repentant and loves to have mercy. That's why He exists. That's why repentance is just so critical. And it's a gift given by the Word of God.
God's people gathered around this altar for word and sacrament, they understand they get it. Thanks be to God. I am safe in this place. I won't be misunderstood.
The issue of greed is always accompanied with the issue of envy. And so when you throw the greed stone, you have to look at the log in your own eye.
You want to do something out of the box? You want to do something innovative or relevant? Drop a knee at the word, and he became man, or this is my body given for you. This is my blood shed for you of forgiveness of sins.
In about 5 minutes, we'll play Issues Etc. soundbite of the week. In the meantime, we're wrapping up a conversation on a new Pew Research Center poll on the marriage rates of Americans. Colleen Carol Campbell is our guest. She writes a weekly column for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Colleen, a quick question before we wrap up. Have we crossed culturally a threshold, and are the higher marriage rates that we enjoyed in the past here in America just a thing of the past?
Well, it certainly looks that way sometimes. I do think it's going to be a long time before we see any reversal of these trends. But never say never. You know, I mean, there's a very strong pull toward marriage. It has great advantages. And when you look at surveys of young people, especially teenagers and young adults, I mean, the vast majority of them want to get married. They want to stay married. They want to marry one person and be with that person for life. These are often kids who came out of broken homes where they, you know, they saw sort of an endless merry-go-round of mom's boyfriends or dad's new wives. So they know the cost of not having enduring marriages or not marrying at all. And they want something more solid for themselves and their children. The problem is what we're not giving them is a path to success. We're not giving them the messages, the information, and the cultural support they need to make good choices that are going to actually help them get from their desire for a strong marriage to a strong marriage itself. They don't know what those steps are, and unfortunately many of the adults in their lives have not modeled those steps. So I think these trends can change, but I think we need to do a lot more intensive, intentional work on teaching young adults what it is to commit, what marriage is all about, what it is and what it isn't, and that's important for the same-sex marriage debate as well as shoring up traditional marriage, and just teaching them what behaviors and decisions they make now, how those decisions are going to impact their happiness down the road, because as young people, they often aren't making the connection between engaging, for instance, in the hookup culture or serial cohabitation, and the way that's going to affect them as spouses 10 years down the road. So those are the connections we need to make more explicitly for young people, and there's plenty of data to do this. The data is on our side. We simply have to actually share it with young adults.
Colleen Carol Campbell is host of a radio and television program called Faith and Culture. She's author of the book The New Faithful, and she writes a weekly column for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. You can read those columns at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Thanks, Colleen.
Thanks for having me, Todd.